Christy Spirituality Centre presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome back to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Centre in Epsom. We are a centre for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our centre, the Mercy Sisters, our programs, or about social justice. Today, my visitor is Sister Margaret Brown. Sister Margaret, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Thank you, Beata.
Sister Margaret Brown is a Sister of Mercy and has recently celebrated her 60th Jubilee of Mercy Religious Life. During these 60 years, she was working as a nurse, a counselor, and later as a pastoral worker in a parish. Sister Margaret was raised in a Catholic family in Auckland. The Catholic faith must have been very strong in this family. Out of six siblings, all three boys and two of the three girls chose religious life. Whereas the eldest daughter married and reared a family, the two younger daughters became Sisters of Mercy, and all three sons became priests. One of whom is Bishop Dennis Brown, the recently emerited Bishop of Hamilton and former Bishop of Auckland. Sister Margaret, four out of five siblings and yourself chose religious life. What do you think was the reason for so many vocations in one family?
Well, I think, Beata, that we were brought up in a Catholic atmosphere. It was a great parish to be in, and they had a lot of Catholic things happening for the youth. We had like a great tennis club where we all met on Saturday afternoons, and it was the general aura of the parish, and a lot of the families that we knew there had boys going to the seminary. Or it was a great era for vocations to the religious life and the priesthood.
What parish was it?
Remuera.
Remuera?
In Auckland, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So St. Yes. Michael's.
That's the one, yes, yes.
And what was the reaction of your parents when one sibling after the other announced their intention of embracing religious life, which meant not raising their own families?
Well, I think that they were quietly pleased that their children had been chosen. They didn't talk too much about it, and I was the second one to leave. My brother was the first. He went to the seminary, and then I went soon after that, so I still left four at home, and so gradually, as the years went by, they followed, and then my sister came to join me too, and that was very, very good for me to have her.
So you had part of your family with you in the same congregation?
Yes, it was lovely, yes, and still is.
Yeah.
Yes.
So was she influenced by you when you joined the Sisters?
I'm sure she was. Yes.
And what made you choose religious life?
Well, I responded to be authentic, to be true to myself. I felt this calling deep within. I tried to dodge it for a while, so I went and enrolled to do my nursing training, but it still grew deeper and deeper, and so in the end I gave in to God. And so I thought, well, as my mother said, you can try it. I think she thought I mightn't last long, but anyway.
But so, you lasted very long.
Indeed, yes, yes.
That's great. For those of you who've just tuned in, you are listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Centre in Epsom. We are on air every Friday morning at 8:40 on Planet FM 104.6. And if you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. Or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Sister Margaret Brown. Sister Margaret is a Sister of Mercy who recently celebrated 60 years of religious life and is telling us a little bit of how she found her way to religious life and that she felt the vocation deep within. Sister Margaret, you ended religious life in 1951?
That's right, yes.
That was 10 years before Pope St. John the 23rd called Vatican II, the big council of changes in the church.
Correct.
Can you tell us more about how was religious life at that time for you?
Well, there were 40 of us in training, so I guess they had to have some rules and discipline to look after us all, and so it was quite restricted in a way. Looking back now, we had a bell to tell us when to get up and when to go to bed and when to go to prayers and when to go to meals. So there were lots of bell ringings. And so that's, yes, so it was quite an ordered, monastic, really.
Were all the 40 staying together in one yes. part of a building, or how was it?
Yeah, we were all together in St. Mary's in Ponsonby.
Mm-hmm. Mm. How many shared one room?
No, we had a dormitory, mm-hmm. yes, with curtains in between. Then they built a new novitiate for us, and that is now the hospice, the Mercy Hospice. Mm-hmm. So I saw that building going up. Yes.
You were one of the first who was living in,
true.
In yes. today's Mercy Hospice.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And what else happened in that time? How was life? It was ordered by the bells.
Yes, but we made great friendships, which have lasted. We had to make our own fun, really, and we did that quite well. Mm-hmm. And we had quite a group of young Irish sisters in the group, so we had lots of Irish songs and dancing, and so there were good times, you know.
So they came as postulants?
They did, yes, yes.
And could you do something on your own, or did you go out in groups?
We went out in twos, anyway. But, yeah, we went out in groups if there was something on.
Mm-hmm. So you could go to the movies or to a concert? Or
no, not really. Not when we were novices. And but now and again, someone will put on a movie at the theatre, then we could all go in a bus, you know. Quite different.
So it was specially organised for the sisters?
Oh, yes,
for the
a great occasion, yes. Mm, yes.
Do you remember any of the movies that you saw at that time?
Oh, no. And sometimes the boarders at St. Mary's would have a movie and we'd be allowed to go over and if it was all right for us to see it.
So somebody had to watch them first before... And did you have the chance to visit your family during your time?
Yes, yes, because my family lived locally, mm-hmm. and but not. I just couldn't go off, you know. Now and again, we had visiting Sunday. The family could come in once a month.
Oh, that's
to see us.
Because I know from congregations where the sisters were not allowed to go out and visit the family, even.
No.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. And how did you perceive the time of Vatican II and the documents that were produced during this council? So 1951 to 1961, that was the time that you were describing now.
Yes.
And I assume that you were wearing the habits, the long habits.
That's right, yes.
And then
yes.
came Vatican II with lots of changes. But during the time that Vatican II was taking place in Rome, did you hear anything about it, and what were the? Did you perceive any changes already?
Oh, it was advertised in the Catholic press every week. Mm-hmm. The news would come out, and because we didn't listen to the radio, so and no TV, so it was exciting times. We could see that the wind was changing in the church, and that was quite exciting especially for the younger people, and I guess for a lot of the older ones too, I guess. But I was lucky; I was able to catch some of the enthusiasm of one of the local priests, so that was good. So,
did you talk about it?
Oh yes, oh a lot, yes. What's happening now? You know, yes. And then we made some changes gradually,
yeah,
and like the first change we made externally was to shorten our habits from the ground up 3 inches or something. No, it was and it was outside. But inside we were asked to renew and all religious orders around the world were asked to renew themselves, and we took that very seriously, and we were asked to go back to the roots of our congregation to see what would our founders like us to do in the world today. And that's really what we're still doing.
And if you think of your foundress, Catherine McCauley, how would you summarize what she was doing?
Oh, she was a lady of her time. She was, and she had such courage. She would go out and try new things, and she was smart. You know, when they told her she couldn't go to the hospital to visit in her habit, in those days she went home and got on a costume and went. And smart, yes. Very, very impressive lady, I understand.
So, with the new wind that you were explaining about, the new wind made you think about what would Catherine McCauley have done?
Right.
So, if she was not allowed to go out in the habit, she would have changed.
Yes, yes.
So, you were thinking of, well, if I cannot do this, but the goal is to help somebody, for example, then you would find another way.
Yes, yes, that's right.
That must have been very exciting.
It was, yes. Yes.
And what was the atmosphere among the other sisters? Because the young sisters, you say that they were full of enthusiasm. And the older sister, how did they perceive? Did you have any reactions?
The older ones, no, they seemed to be very, very accepting of it. And looking forward to what was going to happen next. And we were never sure.
Were they also afraid of something? Because not everybody takes changes easily.
Yeah, well, there were some that were a bit nervous about it, and some chose not to shorten their habits, for example, or move out of the headdress that we always wore.
They had the chance to decide if they wanted to.
Oh, sure. Yes, yes, yes.
And did everyone shorten the habits the same way?
Well, most people did, the ones that wanted to, yes, yes, and they gradually came up, you know.
So you got the information from the Catholic newspaper at that time about what was happening.
Yes, and at the council.
Did you have anybody else, like an official person who officially informed you about what concerned the sisters?
Well, the congregational leader, as we call her now, she would send out little memos to say that we were having a meeting about renewal or a weekend or whatever it was, and putting things in process so that we could keep up with the requests of Vatican II. Mm. So they were exciting times, yeah.
And I believe you were working as a nurse in Whangarei at the conclusion of Vatican II.
Yes.
And can you remember any specific action that was taken as a response after Vatican II had concluded, after that council had concluded?
Well, it was setting up of groups to look at various aspects of the changes that we needed to make. And for example, there's one group that I was part of would take people to Waiheke for the weekend to help them with any questions and, you know, talk about what we perceived as the requests of Vatican II. And that was great.
So you had workshops about it?
Yes, yes.
And in the churches, did you realize any changes in the churches?
Well, I think they, from my perspective, which is, you know, small, but I don't think they were as quite as excited about it as we were. I didn't perceive that they were, except the occasional person was. I mean, we had a great curate in Whangarei at the time who was over the moon about it all, and he influenced me with his enthusiasm.
So what did he do?
He would come and talk to us about it, about the latest. I don't know how he found out about the very latest, but he seemed to know it all before it came out in the press. And so he would tell us what was coming and what was happening. And I think he had a kind of a magnetic personality that and the enthusiasm just rubbed off on us.
Mm-hmm. Was he the first one to celebrate Mass towards the congregation?
Yes.
In Whangarei?
Yes. Yes, at a Catholic Nurses Guild meeting, he pulled the altar out and away we went. It was just wonderful to see those new things happening, making it more real.
That must have been a big change for everyone.
It was, yes. Yeah. Can you imagine Jesus at the Last Supper with his back to the wall? You know, with his front to the wall, I mean. You know. Yes, so that was a good change.
Mm. And I understand that only a few years after the council, you had to travel to with Dame Sister Mary Leo to the opera houses in the world. So you had the chance to see these changes that happened in that came from Vatican II, from Rome, into yes. and spread out to the whole world. With that trip only a few years later, you had the chance to see what was happening in other parts of the world. Can you tell us more about this trip and about Dame Sister Mary Leo for those of the listeners who don't know her?
Well, I don't think we've got time for that. I mean, it would take me all day. But I guess looking at the Vatican II subject, that I was very impressed with the sisters in America. Yeah. They seemed to me to be much freer than we were at that point in time. They seemed to have progressed a little faster. And wonderful, wonderful women. I, mind you, I was only there for 2 weeks, so this is just my own opinion. But I was so taken with those wonderful American sisters of different, some were Mercies and some were not. And it was a great experience for me.
Can you tell us, give us an example of what you perceive with the sisters in America?
Well,
some obvious changes.
Well, they were able to, for an example, they were going off for their holidays, you know, travelling around and getting planes and going to other places that we, well, in my experience, we hadn't been able to do that for work and going to workshops and things. You could do it, but not for pleasure, you know. So, so that was...
So you were also on a working trip because you were there.
I was minding Sister Mary Leo.
So just quickly, who was Sister Mary Leo?
She was an internationally famous opera singing teacher who taught Kiriti Kanawa and Mina Foley and so many others. And she was a wonderful, she had such a gift for teaching pupils singing and all that goes with opera, the acting. She did the whole thing, in voice production and dress and everything. Whereas when they went to London, and we met some of them in London, and they would have to have about four different teachers for each thing, voice production and music. And but Mary Leo did it all. And but she was wonderful, and she got this scholarship to travel to the opera houses where she had pupils singing in most of the important opera houses of the world. So we travelled all over America and Europe and England and Australia and met up with so many of her pupils, Switzerland, yeah, great.
And so that was in the beginning of the 1970s?
72. Yeah, 3 months around the world. Mm.
So that's already, if I go back to Vatican II, changes that 7 years after Vatican II.
Yes.
And that means that some changes had been carried out already.
Yes.
And as you say, that the sisters in America, they were already able to travel for pleasure.
Yes.
Not just for work.
And they had, I was still in the habit, and Sister Maria, we were both in the habit still, but the American sisters were in mufti, as we call it. So they were, they'd advanced, I think.
But you had you were wearing the habit that was already shortened.
Yes. Yes.
And could you see hair, or was it...
Not at that point.
Not at that point.
No. Oh, yes, no, we could. We did, actually. I'm sorry about that. I think we were allowed to. Yes, we could. Mm.
And so you had good time with the American sisters?
Wonderful. Yes, yes. Freedom was the word I think I'd put on them. Yeah. Yes, that we were coming to.
Yeah. And then you came to Europe, and you met sisters in Europe also?
Not so many, just a few. I went to Germany, Hamburg, and met the RSCJ sisters there. They were lovely, but they were still in the habits too.
Yeah, and in England, Ireland? You went to England,
didn't you? Went to England and Ireland, yes, and went to the cradle of the Mercy Sisters in Dublin.
Yeah.
And that was a privileged time too, to be there with them.
And they were still wearing the habit?
They were, yes. Yeah. Yes.
And what do you know anything about how they perceived the changes when you came there? Did you?
I think it was more like we were too. Some were excited about it and some were a bit unsure. And, yeah, so it was just time was a great healer, I think, and bring us, you know, to an understanding of the freedom that we were allowed to choose things, which was a new thing, because instead of the bells telling us to do, we could choose, you know, what we, a few things that we could do. So that was good.
It takes a lot of learning if you were told something for years and now you have the choice. That's always a challenge, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
You have to take the right decisions.
That's right, yes.
And can you tell us a little bit more about your time in Ireland at the house where it all started?
Oh, it was wonderful. I got there by mistake, really, that I didn't realise that you weren't supposed to stay there because the nuns were overburdened, and so they didn't kind of encourage visitors because they were teaching in school all day and didn't have time to care for the visitors too well. And I didn't know that you weren't supposed to, so I just wrote and asked if I could come and stay, and they were very welcoming. And I had a great time there and realised later that I really wasn't supposed to be there. And so, you know, I consider that a great blessing that I was allowed to see the house in its most original state.
Yeah.
So the way Catherine would have seen it, with the old agar cooker down in the red tiles in the kitchen and the chanting at the office and things like that. Yes.
So you had that blessing thanks to Sister Mary Dio.
Well, she didn't, yes, thanks to her, but she actually didn't come to Ireland. She decided to go down to Surrey and stay with Kiri Tikanawa for a week while I went off to Ireland.
And how was it to travel with Sister Mary Leo?
It was different. She was, she loved the opera. That was her world, you know. And I wasn't used to roaming around towns at 3 a.m., you know, getting home from operas and things. But she took it all in her stride. She really enjoyed it all.
Yes.
And kept well, thank God.
Did anybody ask her for her secret to discover all these talents? She found all these talents because she was at Ponsonby and St. Mary's?
She was, yes. Well, when we went to London, the man from the London School of Music, all the hierarchy, as if it were there with pen and paper out ready to find out. You know, they said, the best pupils we have are the ones you send us. So what is your trick? What do you do? And she, being very down to earth, she just said, well, I just take each girl as she comes and I find out what gifts God has given her and I work on those. So the notebooks and pencils went away. You know, that wasn't quite what they were expecting.
But that was true.
Yeah, and she was like that. She got right down to the kernel of things. And yes.
That's a real blessing to be with a person like this who has a talent to find talents.
Yes.
And to support the talents.
Yes.
And did you have much contact with other sisters, other religious sisters during your trip?
No, only when I stayed with them just briefly, you know, two or three nights at each place. So not too much, no.
And did you share much about your experience when you came back to New Zealand?
Oh, they couldn't stop me. Yes. It was like on a tour of the... Tell us about it, you know. So we had so many experiences.
Can you tell us more about some experience that you're sharing with the sisters here in New Zealand?
Well, one of the... big thing. I got arrested in Germany for having fake money, so that was different.
How did you do that?
I got a cup of coffee for Sister Mary Leo at the Orly Airport in Paris one night, and I used a traveller's check we had in those days, and they gave me fake American money. So next morning, we flew out then to Hamburg, and next morning I went to change it at the bank, and... oh dear, they recognised it straight away. It looked all right to me, but the bank teller recognised that it was fake. So I felt very proud that I felt like Interpol or something. I was able to tell them what time I got it and exactly where I got it, and just the night before. So I felt I'd helped the police in Germany.
That's very good.
So that was a good story to bring home, yeah, among others.
Well, especially if you live in New Zealand and with the sisters not leaving the country usually at that time, it must have been very exciting for them to hear the stories when you went to other places in the world and having to deal with money that you didn't know. And how could you tell fake money from real money if you're not used to American dollars?
That's right. Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much, Margaret. Thank you for sharing all these experiences with us. Yeah. And I wish you a very good day. And I hope that you'll have a lot more stories to tell in the future also to other sisters. And maybe come back to us, to the radio program, and talk about your experience in the parishes or in your experience in counseling work that you've done. And so I'd like to listen, for the listeners, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our Mercy Spirituality Center. If it's a spirituality center, we have retreats, Christian meditation, spiritual companioning, and you are always welcome to give us a ring, and we can find a time for you to come to our center. And if you need to have some time for discernment or just need some quiet time, you're always welcome to stay in our Mercy Spirituality Center. And during Advent, our Mercy Spirituality Center will close soon. It will close on just before Christmas, until mid-January, but we're also already looking forward to next year. One of our special events in 2015 will be a retreat day with Edwina Gately. Edwina Gately is from the United States, and she will share stories and poetry on mothers, sisters, daughters standing on their shoulders. If you book in before New Year, we will have a special early bird fee for you. And if you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or look at our Mercy Spirituality Center website. We have a brand new website, and the website link is www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Thank you very much, and thank you, Margaret, for joining us.
Thank you.